Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, to tell you about my friend's music record shop. Find them at 4191A Manchester Avenue in the heart of the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. This Friday, they've got brand new records coming in from Sam Smith, Rush, All Them Witches, Ween, Daughter, Funkadelic, Little Dragon, Misfits, Danzig, Ice Cube, and a whole lot more. All purchases are 10% off. Free beer from Four Hands Brewery. They'll have vinyl spinning and all kinds of other things going on. They do a lot of in-store performances on Saturdays. Find all that information and more on their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, musicrecordshop.com.
Hey, this is Michael Eisenbeis from Shooting with Annie, Whiskey Morning, and Find a Drive, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
You should know better by now. Don't go falling in love. You should know better than that. Don't go falling.
Falling in love, love, love.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, episode 162, coming to you from Trailhead Restaurant and Brewery in St. Charles, Missouri, with, I'm going to make sure I say this right, but is it Eisenbeis?
That's right.
Michael Eisenbeis.
Yep.
All right, that was me. I messed up a guy's name the other night, and I felt really bad, I did one with Big Mike Aguirre, and I think I said Aguirre, and then he corrected me right away and how to roll the R on it and all that stuff. And so I've been trying to get better about it, you know, trying to make sure I pronounce everybody's names.
I've heard that name pronounced a thousand different ways.
Oh, I bet, yeah. Well, even mine, like with Presley, like, you know, you'd think it'd be fairly common, and especially with Elvis and everything else, but it's still...
Presley.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, like, even some of it's like, you know, like Presley, like they enunciate the certain thing or whatever. I don't know. It's just funny how that's a good one for like the telemarketers. If anytime you ever call it, they can't pronounce it, then you're like, you pretty dead giveaway and stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. But yeah, man, thanks for coming out. This is very exciting for me. I'm looking forward to talking to you, getting to know you a little better.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. I've been a big fan for a while now. Been following whenever you guys play with Shooting with Annie and stuff. Big fan of that project. And I haven't got to see some of your other stuff with Whiskey Morning and Find a Drive yet. But I talked to Kevin Gagnepain about it the other day, and
yeah,
with Whiskey Morning. And so Find a Drive is like is just a duo of that.
Yeah, it's just me and then Susie Bacino, who sings in Whiskey Morning. Mm-hmm. Doing, you know, kind of old country stuff and some original stuff, you know, smaller places, acoustic.
Yeah. You know. Very nice.
It's fun.
Is that a mix of original and cover? Or?
Yep. Yeah. Well, we do a lot of the originals that Whiskey Morning does, and then incorporate some others in there. We try to do pretty much everything, you know, harmony wise. You know, we try to sing most of them together.
Yeah.
So,
how long has you guys been doing Whiskey Morning now?
Well, they've been around for, I don't know, maybe 4, maybe 5 years. It'll be about 2 years that I've been playing with them.
Okay.
I guess this February or so.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was trying to, scrolling through some of the pictures, trying to find some stuff, like, for Kevin's episode. I like to try to tag some pictures on just to, for the website and stuff, mm-hmm. to go along with all the audio. And but it looked like there have been some lineup change stuff like throughout the year. Some of the
with Whiskey Morning,
yeah,
several. They've you know, had different drummers. Mm-hmm. Its main core was always Susie and then Dave Henson from Killer Vintage.
Yeah,
Dave got really busy this year, so he quit playing in September. But the kind of core lineup since then has been me and Kevin, Susie, Joe Meyer, and Bob Breidenbach.
Yeah.
Joe is now, he's going back to play with Super Jam more, so he'll be filling in. So we're kind of in between drummers right now.
Sure. Yeah, it's, for as a fan, it's sometimes it's kind of a bummer. Like, I've noticed, like, a lot of guys playing a lot of different projects all around town. It's hard for them to make...
It's the St. Louis thing.
Yeah, right. But it's you know, you get attached to a particular lineup sometimes.
Sure.
And then, like, all of a sudden, somebody had to, you know, step down or whatever it might happen. And it's just like it's always kind of tough to readjust and, you know, get... But, I mean, not that... You know, they're all fantastic players, but it's just... It's one of those things, like, you know, just
it changes the dynamic,
yeah,
you know, every time. So,
but yeah, I mean, I've, like I said, been following a lot of different bands around, and it's I always joke, but there's an Anchorman. You ever watch that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's this part where Steve Carell's like sitting there at the end of the desk, Christina Applegate's character is going to do the news, take over, and he's like, "You're not Ron."
Yeah.
And like, I just always do that line, like whenever there's a lineup change, I'm like, "You're not Ron." And I'm like, So, but yeah, man. So Shooting with Annie, is there anything coming up with that project?
Shooting with Annie probably plays 4, maybe 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. We started recording our second project, which was, the plan was to be 3 different discs. We've got about 18 songs somewhere in their phase of completion, and mm-hmm. we've got like another maybe 10 to do. But we worked really hard over the spring, took summer off. Fall's always a mess because yeah. Kevin's always involved with a lot of stuff. And so maybe this, late this winter, we'll get back into that and,
nice. And
probably re-record a lot of stuff, because I'm sure over that time we've learned to hate some of the stuff we've done,
yeah.
or it's changed, changed direction or something. So
I was listening to Grape Stains on the way just to get into the mood and
that's
all that.
I think that's a great record.
Yeah.
It still holds up well.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of it. I really enjoy the album and what you guys did with that. Like, it's
there was kind of a, there was 7 people, not counting all the guest musicians that helped us out on that. And there was kind of a magic involved when that whole project came together, with just all of us getting to know each other, playing wise, that hadn't played with each other before or something. And so it's, we're that much more critical of what we're recording now, because mm-hmm. How do you grab that kind of spark that was there in that first recording we did? It's kind of tough. So I think we're a lot more, we pick on ourselves a lot more and pick the material apart a lot more.
Yeah.
So that's, like I said, probably why we'll end up re-recording a lot
sure.
of it
yeah.
Coming up, but who knows.
Yeah. You, how much of that album did you write?
I guess I had writing credits with a friend of mine that I've played music with since high school. Him and I still bounce songs back and forth. He's in L.A. He directs movies in L.A. now.
Oh, very cool.
But he still writes songs all the time. So my old band was The Nukes. And so we still kind of write together. Kevin and I worked on some stuff. And, really, it was a whole collaborative thing. There was main songwriters on all of the songs, but...
Yeah.
But none of those songs happened without the whole band adding to it.
Yeah.
Everybody, kind of the Shooting with Annie thing is, somebody will bring a song, but once you throw it out there, it's not really yours anymore. Everybody mm-hmm. starts to work with it and creates the song and what it becomes. It's kind of a letting go of the ego of, well, no, I want it to go this way, or this is the way it's supposed to sound for me. Once you let go of that and you allow it, yourself to open to everything else, I think really amazing things can happen.
Yeah, definitely.
So
yeah, that's cool. Because like you said, it's hard to find those guys that are willing to, and most, a lot tends to be, a lot of writers are pretty attached to what they're, their personal stuff, and it's hard to release it to a group, to a collaborative effort
sure.
like that. So
I think it's, I think probably it's a musical maturity thing. You know, when you're young, you're either the original music guy or the cover music guy. And, and you just, you nail it.
Yeah. Very unprofessional. My phone's going off here.
You're either, no, we just do original stuff, or we just do cover stuff. And then as you get older, you do cover stuff because you want to make some money.
Sure.
And you appreciate the original stuff that much more, and you're not as tied to... I'm a guy, like, I'll write a song, and in my mind, okay, that's the way the song goes. And it's so hard for me to deviate away that the process, especially working with, Kevin and I work a lot together, it pulls me out of my box of, no, but it's these 3 parts, and this is the way it goes.
Yeah.
And it's helped me a lot, having
sure.
somebody to bounce that off of.
Yeah, yeah. We talked, me and Kevin talked about songwriting quite a bit on his episode, and we're both big fans of a lot of that Americana kind of country stuff that's
sure.
coming out. And
Jason Isbell,
yeah,
Ryan Adams.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jason, that guy's fantastic. And I told him, I think it was off mic, but I told him to... check out John Moreland. He's one of my favorites. And
he told me about that, and I've been checking him out now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He,
very Springsteen-like.
Yeah. There's some... I saw... So, him and John Moreland and Jason Isbell's records came out the same day.
Did they really?
All sorts of great records came out this one day for whatever. I forget what the day was, but they
May something.
Yeah, they called it like Americana Christmas because like so many great records hit on that same day and so. For whatever, you know, I was already a fan of John before that record came out, and I picked up John Moreland's In the Throes and Jason Isbell's Southeastern on the same, you know, that same week, so those records are always connected for me mm-hmm. for that reason. But for me, they go to hand in hand. Like I'll listen to one, I always have to go listen to the other. It's just how that's how they work. So like, but they have a very similar vibe and tone to them, and a lot of dark stuff going on in the record, and John is he's open for Isbell a bunch of times, and they toured together and things, and he's just a very talented guy on his way up right now, and it's cool to see even Jason how successful he's become and and stepping out on his own and
just Jason Isbell's voice, it just does it. His subject matter and then the way he sings it is so nice.
Sure.
Does a great job.
Yeah, there's a lot, that whole Southeastern's, his struggle with getting sober and stuff, and so there's a lot of ways he talked about the same subject matter in very different ways mm-hmm. and stuff, and so it's nice to see a guy that can use metaphor and stuff throughout his writing.
And that's an amazing record, and you would think, how do you top that? That's his pinnacle, but to me, that one and Something More Than Free, I mean, they stand side by side.
Yeah.
They're both amazing records.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, they're both, I saw the guy, Plush, I saw him play over there a couple years ago, and it was just cool to see him.
Was there anybody there?
Yeah, it was a good crowd.
I only went to one show at Plush, and I'm a big Los Lobos fan.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they dropped the ball on advertising or something, but there was probably 80 people there.
Yeah, I think this one sold out, because this was, right before he was hitting. So he was drawing good. He did, and he ended up picking up a second night over at Off-Broadway. So he did another night over there, and that sold out right away also because everything's a much smaller place.
Sure.
But also, so I think he sold out both nights in town. And then, of course, it's one of the – I had a similar thing, too, just recently with – I saw Chris Stapleton at the Firebird. And I'm like, this is the last time I'll see this guy in a club. I know, this guy's too good to be playing, for
He's got an amazing voice.
Yeah. And then, of course, it was shortly after that, he does the stuff on – the awards with Justin Timberlake, and I'm like,
see
you later, and so
that would have been a great show to see at the Firebird.
Yeah, it was unreal. Except for it was about 100 degrees in there, but because it was just packed in there, but
that low ceiling.
But he sounded incredible, and there's something when he performs when Chris and same thing with Jason, they both perform a lot with their wife. Amanda Shires plays mm-hmm. a lot with Jason. And plays violin and stuff in his band, and he also plays without her. But when she's available, he's there. She's there, and same thing with Chris. His wife sings harmony with him and stuff, and those two it's like a Johnny and June kind of thing. It's it's fun to watch them they stare at their partner, and it's really something. Special,
That I can't remember Stapleton's wife's name, but her album's getting ready to come out, and all the buzz is that it's going to be amazing.
I bet she's got a great voice too, and I mean if Chris helped her write any of that stuff or anything like that, I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. But so when Jason came back to town, he's played played Peabody, big old theater, and I'm sure. When Chris comes back, it'll be the same thing. But
sure,
I really wanted Chris. Chris opened for Little Big Town for a while, and they played Peabody, and I wanted to go just to see Chris then. But tickets were a little expensive.
I'm kind of curious to see how he works out. His look is a little little rough for the cute little country crowd out there now with the, you know, tight jeans and the, you know. But so I'm wondering if he's going to break into that bigger level, like, you know, all these, I don't know, you know, they all sound the same.
Sure.
And he's so different. I wonder if he's just too traditional. And he's, you know, he'll still stay at a little bit lower level for people to actually really enjoy it.
I hope, I'm whenever I see stuff like that, like a guy that, you know, even Jamie Johnson sort of did it for a while. Like, you know, he was had a lot of build up going in Nashville and stuff. And but I'm hoping, like, some guys that are more traditional or, you know, a little outside, like, that Nashville kind of lends more that way, you know, instead of so much of the pop country that we have right now. Like,
well, I think, you know, when, like, speaking of Isbell and stuff, I mean, he's doing it without Nashville, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and more successful artists that are able to do that and break that whole machine that's shoving all this stuff down our throats, that, you know, it's going to be good. I hope that it can, that some artists can maintain that. How many Jason Isbells are there?
Yeah, sure.
You know, not many probably, so, you know, might not be possible.
Right. I kind of had a similar talk with Al Holiday. You know, he does more like soul and R&B kind of things, but we're talking about that Nathaniel Ratliff and the Night Sweats. Like, they're you know, they broke through on radio and a big hit, and he's on Stax Records, and so it's a lot of that old you know, soul in there on the record. And but for a guy like Nathaniel to break through and become a success, you know, almost overnight, you know, he got the song started picking up steam, then he got on Tonight Show, and then it was all over after that. Like, he sold out the Ready Room when he was here in town. And but Al has a similar sound in a way, and it's like, it's for me, it's exciting to see, you know, if one guy, you know, it's going to open up the door for so many others. So,
sure.
like I said, the success of Isbell and Stapleton and all these guys, and you know, it only can help Shooting with Annie and all these other, you know, these other projects.
It just seems like it's a return to more real music, and not so slick, I guess.
Sure.
You know?
So many people have this, like, that super polished kind of, you know, overproduced and music and stuff, and that's like, there's something to the rawness and the grittiness and things, and, like, you know, it's just a, you don't need all that.
I mean, I realize there are people that just want to go to the Outback. To them, that's the steak, you know? And that's what, you turn on WIL, there's your Outback artists, you know? But if you want a good, fine steak, something that, you know, you're going to go to a specialized place, and that's what all that music is. It's, you know.
Yeah. Let's backtrack a bit. Let's talk about, have you always lived here in St. Louis?
I have, yeah.
Born and raised?
Yep. In North County.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I've been here all my life, just outside of town in Wentzville, so I consider St. Louis home here.
Yep.
Do you have a favorite local restaurant to...
I have Indian food.
Yeah?
Yeah. Havelli used to be one of my favorites out on Page.
Okay.
I mean, any Indian food, I'm...
Sure. I've tried to, I've been, you know, as I've gotten older now, you know, I'm 30 now, and I've been trying to try new things all the time. Just, you know, for so long I sort of just stuck in my comfort zone, I guess, or whatever it was. But, like, you know, I tried, like, sushi even for the first time not too long ago and that kind of stuff. Like, just trying new stuff all the time. But I still haven't... got around to trying Indian food yet, and then it's part of that's probably because I don't know. I would like to go to somewhere or go with somebody that I
best
recommend.
Key.
Yeah, like yeah. Because like I don't. And that's kind of how I felt with sushi the first time. Like, we went to a place, and I'm looking at the menu. I really didn't know what I was looking at and what to order and stuff, just because I'm completely new to me. So the same thing. I'd be afraid to pick the wrong dish in an Indian place and wind up something, you know, super hot. And
I think that's what keeps people, you know, from going to a lot of places like that is, you know, they don't know what they're going to order.
And I think it's funny how many people, like, you know, when they do go to other places, they, like, they just, like, pick, like, I tease my wife a lot because we'll go somewhere and she'll, like, get chicken fingers or something. Like, I'm like, you know, you can get chicken fingers anywhere. Like, you know, it's like, why don't you get a nice pasta dish or a steak or what, you know, something. But, so, but she likes chicken fingers, so. I was like, all right.
Whatever works.
Right? Yeah, right. So, do you recall your first concert?
Oh, yeah. Kiss, 1979.
Oh, wow, man.
I don't know. I guess it was the arena. It wasn't the Checker Dome then. I don't remember. But, yeah, I was like 8, 9 years old.
Yeah.
Like that.
Man, that would be a good one.
Yeah.
I saw them with Poison, like, you know, way later. But probably like 2003 or, I don't know, somewhere in there. I was, like, either in high school or just got out of high school or somewhere in that time, and but yeah, like, it was over at Verizon or Riverport or now at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, and it was incredible. They still sounded great. Like, it was one of the, this holds up still as one of my favorite rock and roll shows. Like, it was,
I remember it was probably half full. It was 79, so that's when Dynasty came out with the disco song.
Yeah,
you
sure.
know, and it was like November. And within 2 months, I think Peter Crisp was gone, and, you know, so I was Ace Frehley fan like everybody else, but, you know, it was nice to actually see them for even whatever state they were in. I don't remember. I was a kid, you know. It was amazing to me, so.
Yeah, well, all the pyro they had going on, and Gene Simmons did, like, this blood-gargling bass solo and stuff, and, like, just
they lift him up to the light.
It was, it's quite the spectacle to see those guys. I mean, and of course, at the end of the night, they all shatter their guitars on stage and all this stuff. It's just like, I always think, like, that Cake song, How Do You Afford Your Rock and Roll Lifestyle?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, how long will they keep, guitars, whatever it is. How long will they keep making new guitars and all this stuff? And he's like, because they're smashing them. And he's like, as long as the soda cans are red, white, and blue ones. And
there's the John Hyatt song too, a perfectly good guitar.
Yeah,
he talks about smashing guitars.
Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's kind of silly to do that, but it is rock and roll. It is. It's like I said, it's fun to see them do it. But,
you know, I'm a big Who fan, and I can understand why Townsend did it. You know, he thought it was a type of art, you know, it was the music and the show and all that went into it. So, you know, a lot of people get upset. It's like, how can you do that? And it's like, who cares?
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
sure.
He was in debt for a long time because of all the shit they broke, so.
Yeah. You know. Oh, yeah. they're coming back. I think they're coming back to here soon.
They canceled both their dates here last year.
Yeah.
Because, like, Roger couldn't sing or something.
Yeah.
I went to Nashville 3 or 4 years ago, and they performed Quadrophenia, which is my favorite Who record. And that was awesome. And I guess I saw them, like, in 89. Yeah, 89 when they first kind of, well, not first. How many times did they get back together to do a final tour or whatever?
Right.
That was at Busch Stadium, and they were doing parts of Tommy. And,
Yeah, I do. I try not to. And I try to make those, but some of them are, like, you know, like Bruce Springsteen's coming to town, and, like, it's sold out instantly, and tickets are
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the same thing, Tool's coming to town, and, like,
AC/DC.
Yeah, AC/DC. Yeah. It's like, there are a lot of these big tours, and, like, I'd love to see these, you know, bands that I've loved for a long time live, and especially guys like AC/DC and The Who, and these guys that you're not sure how much longer they're going to be able to do it.
Right.
It's so hard to afford to be able to do that.
Yeah. You know, if you can afford to buy the ticket at its face value, you know, well, then you have to get it before it sells out.
Yeah.
And then you got to pay more if you don't get it. It's
I don't know. I know a lot of people have been complaining about it and things like the scalpers and stuff, and it's like, I'd be interested to see how many of those, when it sold out, like, how many of those people were actually people buying, you know, for
tickets. To go see them, yeah.
So, because, like, I feel like that's all, you know, the way that they sell those tickets now, it's like, it's all can be pretty much computer operated, and, like, they can, you know, punch in the card numbers or whatever, you know, and have it all. It's like a, so I don't know,
I'm just curious, I mean, music isn't as popular as it was 25 years ago. How does, I don't know, where's AC/DC playing? Scotch Raid or something?
Yeah.
So 20,000 seats, how does it sell out in 5 minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Does anybody really sell out that quick anymore?
Yeah.
Or is it because somebody's buying 10 tickets at a time?
Yeah.
Or, you know?
I wish I knew, and I wish it didn't happen that way, and I wish the tickets were more affordable for the fans that actually could go.
The old days of standing in line at the record store and waiting for the door to open and buy a ticket.
There's some I think of, like, the Foo Fighters, when they came to town. I think you had it, like, I think, I don't know, they must have did something online, but they also had, like, a deal, like, if you had to go down and actually go to Verizon, and you had to stand in line and get your tickets and stuff. So there was a lot of people requested off for the day and all that stuff to actually make it possible to go. But but you got down there, and everybody got, like, a card, you know, like, a, you know, their number, and it was a random, like, lottery. So, like, you could have wherever, whatever number they started with, it could have, you know, even though you had number one, you could be last. So,
sure.
So it was...
Seems a little bit more fair.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember. I didn't go to the Foo Fighters show, but I think that's more of a better approach to it, you know, to something, like I said, a little more fair than... Man, I need a drink of water or something.
Well, there's no server.
Yeah,
so.
Right, yeah. Do you know what your first album was? Was it also
that
time?
The first album I bought, it was 76. I bought Kiss Rock and Roll Over. It was like $4 at Peaches.
Yeah.
It's funny. I still look at it, and I had to ask my cousin what their names were, and I wrote them on the record by each of the heads.
Yeah.
You know, spelled them all wrong, of course.
Yeah. I've been trying to think, like, because I've asked the question a couple times, and it's always... leads to some sort of fun story and things, but I don't know. I can't really recall, like, my first one that I bought, but I do recall, like, Christmas, I put a couple of CDs or something on my list, and I remember my parents getting me, like, Aerosmith Greatest Hits and Pearl Jam Vitalogy and some other stuff, but, like, those stuck out, and those were a big part of my life for early 90s and stuff growing as a kid. What gets you into playing music then? Was it just watching Kiss? And
I had an uncle who played guitar. He just recently passed away, as a matter of fact.
Sorry to hear that.
He would bring his guitar over, and he could play, you know, 100 songs, all in the key of C or E, but all the old country stuff, Elvis stuff. He could sing Elvis great, and I just remember watching him, and my mom tells a story when I was a kid that I was strumming on some, you know, toy guitar, and he heard it and thought there was some sort of potential, so he gave me a guitar, and I started taking lessons in grade school. On Thursdays, some company would come, and you could skip recess and take a guitar lesson. So I did that for a few years and just kept with it. You know, I didn't play a whole bunch of sports. You know, I played guitar instead. So
yeah.
I always kind of liked the fact that I couldn't play football now if I wanted to, but I can still play guitar. So
sure.
I feel like I made a good choice for myself. But
has always been guitar?
I play, the other thing as a kid, you know, my dad had a banjo, so I played a lot of banjo around the house, and I still, you know, I'm not a good banjo player at all, but, you know, I played some on the Shooting with Annie record, and I play mandolin, and a little bit of piano, and, you know, but I'm not good at any of them, I just fake my way the best I can, so.
Yeah, I've told before, but my dad, he, you know, she played a lot of the house. Like, it was never you know, he says all the time he doesn't really know a lot. Like, you know, he knows enough to entertain himself with it, and, mm-hmm. and he likes to try with guitar, and harmonica was his where he shined. He played set in with a lot of bluegrass and blues bands and stuff, and mm-hmm. would play, and then he. We had a piano at our house, and like I said, who knows when the last time that was even tuned and things, but he would always, when he like passing by it, he would always go, you know, like mm-hmm. do the old time rock and roll, and yeah. that was about all he knew, like, so, but it was one thing he always wanted to get better and learn it, but you know, he still hasn't quite done it. But every time my buddy Jeremy would come over, Jeremy's like, he's just crazy with me, you know, he's got like perfect pitch, like led, it was in the like the church band and stuff, did all these things, and very talented young guy, and mm-hmm. but he would come over, and my dad, you know, he just want to hang out and, you know, have fun, but my dad would always like trying to talk him into, hey, just, you know, play something, you know, so because Jeremy, you know, he knew all the classical pieces and stuff, he could play all that, you know, it was, so my dad was a big fan of watching him, but yeah, so we were just talking the other night about this stuff. You know, I remember we used to play. It was a while back. We did like my dad got married last year, and we after the wedding reception, all this stuff, we sat around this bonfire, having a nice little hangout, just family and at his house, and my now stepbrother. Brad was on guitar, my dad was playing harmonica, and like my 8-year-old cousin was on tambourine, and like actually keeping pretty decent time for mm-hmm. and we did Chicken Train. My dad does Chicken Train real good for Mozart Mountain Daredevils mm-hmm. on harmonica and stuff, so it was just fun. Like, I have musical background in the family, but never been my thing. Like, I
did you ever try?
I've tried a little bit. Like, I did pick up a 6th grade band. They offered you could sign up, and I tried the cornet for a bit, and I wasn't any good, and I don't know, I just never had that natural knack to play, and but for me it was sports. Like, I played a lot of basketball mm-hmm. and football, and with my size it, I was always pretty good at it, so but then I started having knee problems and things, and I kind of got out of all of it, and I started working full time, and just didn't quite have the time for keep up with sports, and
sure.
everything else got started taking over my life and things, but so I don't know, for me it's like I'm a huge music fan though, like and I kind of feel like we all have our parts, you know, there's the artists that make it, but they're all, you know, we you know, I feel like I try to do as much as a fan for, you know, to support, you know, that's why I'm even doing this show. Like, I had a bunch of buddies that played, and I was like, I want to help people know who you guys are. And
yeah, that's awesome.
So I've been trying to, you know, take it up a notch. I'm, as a fan, you know, not just listening to things.
Well, there's 1,000 guitar players in town, but there's not many people doing what you're doing.
Sure,
so,
yeah. Yeah, it is fun. It's cool, like, to be doing what I'm doing and stuff. But yeah, it's like and it feels great to. Lately, you know, like a lot of people, like I said, just last night I had a buddy who was, you know, thanking me over and over for what I do, and he's like, so it's cool to hear that. It's, you know, feels really, really good to be appreciated and.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe one of these days I'll actually take a lesson or do something, and because I do feel like, you know, I don't know if anything will ever happen with it, but I do have a dream, like, of writing a song, and that's like a bucket list thing, is to write a song and have it recorded somehow or mm-hmm. whatever with somebody, and I just think it'd be cool to, you know, I'd be very proud of that, you know, to
sure.
have it on a record or something like this, so someday hopefully I'll get there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it'd be fun to strum around on guitar a little bit.
It's a convenient instrument.
Yeah.
You can bring it around anywhere, you know. It's, you can sit on the couch, you can sit in a chair, you can sit on the floor.
Yeah.
Lay in bed, whatever.
You know? Right.
You know, drums would suck, you know, for that reason alone. So,
yeah, my friend Drew, he's been on the show several times, but he, you know, he plays a lot of drums, but he has a uses a cajon a lot with a lot of the acoustic sets that he does, and you know, that's a great thing for, I mean, if you compared to the full kit, but he can get a lot of different sounds and tones out of that, and with just that box. So like,
sometimes we'll do a Whiskey Morning Trio, and Joe Meyer will bring that.
Yeah.
And Joe can play anything. He's amazing. But yeah, it's a pretty cool little instrument.
Yeah, a little more convenient than trying to carry around a whole kit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a nice thing. The same thing with harmonica. You can fit in your pocket, and you can take it around. I don't know. I think that I do find, I don't know if it would be guitar. I think it would be fun to try any of it, and to get good enough. But I do, like I said, with my dad playing harmonica and the fact that, like, I do really enjoy the blues, I think harmonica would be a lot of fun to play, too. Like,
sure.
Something about it just draws me to it. And I'm, like, a big fan of a lot of different guys that play around town. And I watch, Tom Papa Ray play with Jeremiah Johnson band a lot, and some of those guys, and Phil Wright has been on the show, and so a lot of cool harmonica players and stuff too.
You know, I used to do a lot of kind of just solo gigs, and I would play harmonica with guitar, and you know, I figured out just what I needed to do. You know, kind of getting involved with this. I'll say Beatles tribute, but we haven't really playing Beatles songs. We don't know the extent of how we're going to do it. It's me and Joe Meyer and John Bozzoni and Jerry Jost, and I'm trying to learn the Lennon harmonica parts. Well, like doing all the research, he used like three harmonicas, so like he crossed harp on these, and he had like the chromatic or whatever. So I'm trying to learn just the few harmonica parts, which seems so simple, but instead of blowing out, you're drawing in a lot, and it just screwing with my brain, you know? It's like, so it's just like constant going over and over and over, and just learning the pattern and you know, kind of the muscle memory of it.
Sure.
Is the problem, but
is that is that, sorry, that's early stages?
We're starting rehearsals this week, and been talking about it for a little. John Bozzoni is the one who's spearheading it. Mm-hmm. He's been wanting to do it for a long time. We finally got together in the last couple of months and kind of formed a direction, and you know, see where it goes from there.
Oh, very cool.
But you know, it's Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows it, so you have to figure out how you're going to do it.
Do you
just ape exactly what they did? Do you, you know, this is, you know, they did the hard part. They wrote the songs, and they're amazing.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, man, it's crazy how, like, 50, 60 years have passed for some of those songs and, you know, and stuff, and it just feels like they're still so relevant. They're still so
like
they're
still the perfect sketchbook for a song.
Yeah.
You know, it's like everything is kind of derived from all those Beatles songs. You know?
Yeah, it's it's pretty wild. I mean, same goes for The Who and stuff. I mean, those songs all still hold up and stuff.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. It's crazy how like so much of the world's changed, but those songs are still the same. Yeah,
and even young people, you know, 15-year-olds know the Who songs.
Yeah.
You know, they know Zeppelin songs and stuff because it's still played a lot. It's in TV commercials and stuff or whatever. It's themes for TV shows
And then the Beatles, they just got on Spotify now. So like finally
like a Christmas gift. I think it's Christmas Eve is when it started.
Right.
Yeah.
So finally now you can stream all your favorite Beatles songs on Spotify. So, how do you feel about all that stuff? Like
I subscribe to Spotify. It kind of sucks. It seems as if the musicians aren't being paid properly, and I realize that was probably a deal cut between the record labels and these online streaming, services. Mm-hmm. How does a musician make money anymore?
Yeah.
You know, just touring, I guess, and selling T-shirts, you know, for $20 a pop.
But sure.
I've just recently there was somebody that how many 250,000 hits or something on a song, and they made $36 or something. You know, it's like it's a shame.
Yeah, I do agree. I think, but I mean, I'd be interested to see how the breakdown of that though, like, because you know, those people that listen, how many people went and actually purchased the record though, like,
right?
Because that's, for me, that's what I do. Like, I might stream a song and find it through YouTube or Spotify or Pandora and things, and like these various things. But like, if I like something, I go buy the record. And if I really like the people too, I'll go see them live. So it's like,
well, and I have to say, probably most of what I use on Spotify are already albums or something that I have at home.
Yeah, that's.
But
true.
I don't have everything with me, of course. But it's right there.
Yeah,
you know. But I, yeah, because I'll still buy, you know, iTunes. You know, yeah. I still would rather have the actual physical. But
yeah,
how often do we do that?
Nowadays? Yeah, no. There's some of them I bought on CD, and then I bought them on vinyl. So I own a couple of records several times.
Oh, it's funny. Just in December, I was picking up a couple gifts at, what is it, Barnes & Noble, and Ryan Adams' Gold album was there. It was some sort of a reissue with some, like, an extra record in there or something, and I was like, oh, I'm going to buy this, you know? Yeah. It's like, it was so exciting to actually buy an album again, because it's been so long.
Sure.
Like a new album, because everything, if I buy an album, it's something used, you know? So it was exciting to take the wrapper off.
I've been purchasing a lot of records. I bought the other night, I went to see Samantha Fish, and I bought her record on vinyl. She's got her new one, Wild Heart.
I wanted to go to that show. We were actually, Whiskey Morning was playing New Year's Eve gig that night. But was that a good show?
Oh, it was incredible. She's
good.
Very good. Yeah, very talented young lady.
She in Kansas City, right?
Yeah. She. There's a lot going on in her sound. Like, you know, there's the earlier stuff in her set was a little more country feel to it, by the end of the night, she's all rock.
I've watched her band perform War Pigs before.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, she pulls some stuff out.
She does some really good covers. Like, there's a, I've seen her a few times. Like, she did one at Gramophone one night when she and. In her set, she'll do like a solo acoustic thing, and she does Dead Flowers from Stones or Towns Van Zandt. Nice. That's more of the Towns Van Zandt version of it.
Mm-hmm.
She did a Giant High cover this time around. She does War Pigs, but she also did this time she did I Put a Spell on You from
Screamin' Jay.
Yeah, Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
Yeah.
So and it was really cool. Like, just, I mean, she rocks that song. It's,
she's got a good voice.
Yeah,
she really projects.
Yeah, and shreds too. Like, she she can really play.
Yeah. Just a three-piece band?
Yeah, just a trio. She has her drummer Go-Go Ray's been with her for quite a while, but she tends to have a lot of different bass players, whoever's available. Like, a lot of those guys playing a lot of different projects, and who's ever available for that particular run and stuff. So so I've seen her with a couple different guys, and one guy's Scott, whatever his last name. Anyway, but I've seen him with like Mike Zito also, and a couple other guys, blues players and stuff. So he's been in a couple different lineups and stuff. So, but should definitely go see Samantha if you get a chance. So.
Yeah, I'd love to see her.
Yeah, we went to the Maristar show. She played summer, August or something, and she was back. And she comes here quite frequently, being that she's only from Kansas City, so. I'd love to go see her up there and play like Knuckleheads or something in her hometown.
Mm-hmm.
There's another Moreland and Arbuckle from Wichita, and they're a three-piece blues band I really like. And the same thing, one of these days I'd love to go watch them play a hometown show and see, just to compare and contrast, see how it is. And you get into the blues much, or are you?
I enjoy it. I went through my Stevie Ray Vaughan phase in high school, you know, and trying to play all those licks and stuff. And I B.B. King, Live at the Regal. It's one of my favorite live albums of all time. Number two, actually. Yeah. Actually, Bob Seger, Live Bullets, number one.
All right. Yeah, but, Seger's great.
I enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like a little everything. My music's all over the place. I'm very picky, though, with some of it. Like, you know, I can't listen to, like, all metal, but there's metal bands I like and stuff like that. There's all somebody's doing something unique with it or original and stuff. I tend to, you know, something stands out to me a lot more than, but there's a lot of junk in between and stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, same, you know, for any genre, I'm just, metal was just something, you know, throwing out there, but yeah. I got, some questions from some of those fans. I like to throw it out there just to see, get a little social engagement, get people to see what they have to say. One of them was your bandmate, Susie, wanted me to ask about your thoughts on Dwight Yoakam. I'm sure there's a
that's a funny
story there. Yeah,
no, she's a big Dwight Yoakam fan, and I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean. His guitar players are good, but he sounds like Kermit the Frog.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, he's all right.
Sure. There's we always joke, me and my, we're fans. Like, I mean, I like guitars and Cadillacs and some of the stuff. I don't celebrate the whole catalog, but.
Right.
There's a song that he came, a newer one, I like, Back of My Hand. And me and my buddy Dustin always like joke singing to each other and stuff like pick a number, one or two, and like, you know, stuff like it's just a kind of a goofy song, but it was somehow a hit.
We do a couple of them in Whiskey Morning.
Yeah,
she wrote one called "With Love Dwight" about meeting him.
Okay,
sometimes past, probably when he was better looking than he is now. But
yeah,
no offense to Dwight, I'm sure
he is a big listener of the Rock Paper Podcast. So. let's see what else we got here. There was pull this up here. Sorry.
No, that's
sure they had it ready. John wanted to know how you went from a punker to a country picker.
John, who's John? Who?
I don't know how to say his last name.
Keeney. Yeah. Yeah, he plays bass with us sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Just like we talked earlier, I played banjo, and I grew up listening to country music. You know, that's what my parents were: George Jones and Merle Haggard and Dolly and Loretta, and you know, all them. So I heard all this stuff growing up, and. You know, you run from it as a kid, you know, especially when you're into Kiss, and then I was into punk rock,
yeah.
You know, and but you realize it's part of you, you know, mm-hmm. it's when you play an instrument, it all comes through somehow, if you don't force it out of you, you know, some way. So, you know.
I feel like it's sort of natural progression a lot, like, you know, you go through your, like, teen angst kind of, you know, stuff, you relate to more of the punk and the... And of rock or what, you know, and that
the
kind
edge
of stuff.
And the energy and the danger and yeah.
Sure. And then, you know, and a lot of people like the subjects come up a lot where like, you know, you got guys that were rockers and now they're playing, you know, like country music and stuff, you know, and I think a lot of guys realized if they want to keep doing it, it's hard to keep screaming all those songs and stuff, and like if you get to, so you have to. You know, tune it down a bit to more of a country, you know, more mellow vibe to it.
I like the challenge of playing a different style that I don't know how to play, even if I know the music. Years ago, I was around one of those campfire bonfire things, you know, and like a little jam session, and some friends that I still play music with when I can, the Lodge Brothers, Keith Dudding and Wayne Schell and John Nell and Rich Heyer. I listened to bluegrass. My dad was a huge bluegrass fan, but I just started playing with them and learning from them. And I'm still not a bluegrass player, but
yeah.
but you know, those guys know what they're doing. But you know, it was the challenge of it. And you know, whenever I do play now, you know, my arm kills me trying to play that fast and
right.
stuff. But But, you know, it's like anything. It's fun to attempt something else and not just be like a kind of a cheap mimic or something, but to actually try to see where it comes from a little bit and delve into it a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the country stuff, I mean.
Well, not, I always feel like, you know, people. There's a lot of people that, you know, get down on country. Like, it is, they don't like it and things. Mm-hmm. And, but, and then, like, you know, the, I feel like with country music today, like, I mean, granted, there's a lot of the pop stuff in there, but it's a huge genre. Like, I mean, there's from, you know, from one extreme to the other, and it's all considered country music. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, even Jimmy Buffett, you know, people have been calling Jimmy Buffett country, and, like, Jimmy's been doing what he's been doing long before it was country.
Right.
Like, and, but, you know, there's, some people think of country music as just Hank Sr., you know, twang and a guitar, and, but there's so much more that's sure. included in it now. And, like, and I think, like, if you would look at even some Zeppelin songs or some, you know, Steve Bob Seger and all these guys, like, they're considered classic rock, but if you listen to those songs, those are country songs. Like, yeah. you know, like, there's all that's included in what, if it was coming out today, would be considered a country song.
Sure,
and stuff.
Good.
And,
yep.
So I feel like there's a, people, I don't know if it's just people get turned off by the label of, you know, they hear it as considered country music or mm-hmm. whatever, but it's just like, I feel like there's so much of that's like just, it's all just music, you know, it's just right. all, the genres are blending all the time, all over the place, so you got today you got like Jason Aldean, he played, those were, you know, rock guitars and Eric Church, like, you know, he's got a metal band that back, you know, they're a real heavy band that backs him on a lot of that stuff, and then, but they can also play, you know, banjo and
you know,
country stuff.
And it's funny, you know, like in the 90s, the country music, Brooks and Dunn, yeah. Garth Brooks and stuff, you know, I think back to that time, I think, man, that stuff was horrible. And now, like, Whiskey Morning's going back and pulling some of those songs from the 90s, I'm like, man, this stuff is so country compared to what there is now, you know?
Oh, sure.
And, but, you know, that's actually a good point because the punk to country, I mean, Uncle Tupelo is the one who bridged that gap, really, you know, and regardless of what you felt when they were around at the time, if you liked them or not, you know, or didn't quite get it, I mean, they basically invented alternative country and, mm-hmm. and mixing, you know, Neil Young and the Minutemen and Graham Parsons, you know, mixing it all together and creating what they did, you know. So
yeah, I think it's cool to see guys like that, like the, you know, instead of fitting in the mold, they kind of pave their own way in some way and you know, make something unique and original a little bit. And so let's see what else we got here. Larry asked, Merciful Fate or King Diamond Solo?
Merciful Fate.
All right.
Easy answer. Yeah. King Diamond Solo is okay, but Merciful Fate changed my life when I was 10.
Yeah?
It's got to be somebody that knows me if it's
right.
Larry.
Ray says, how many guitars can you play at once?
I don't know. You know, I'm just going to say one on that one.
I think it's cool. We kind of talked about it a little earlier, but El Monstero, excuse me, Brian played like has two guitars. I think he's only playing the one at a time, but he you know, he keeps it
the classical. It puts behind his back.
Yeah.
And he's got to switch between the two parts.
Right. So I thought that was cool. Like, it's fun to see him just I don't know, some of those guys, like, you know, they play that double neck guitar, and mm-hmm. like, nah, that's crazy. Like, there's a lot going on there. Or
it's between the two,
yeah. And then you got guy. There's a guy I really like, John Butler Trio. You ever listen to him?
Have they been around for a long time? It sounds familiar to me, but
they've been around a while. I don't know exactly when, but they're from Australia, and.
Okay.
And he comes over here not every now and then, but plays more like the festival kind of stuff a lot of times. But he plays like a 12-string on a couple of songs, I think. But it's pretty wild to watch him play that. Like, it's just you don't see it very often and stuff. So it's I don't know, it's really neat. But he did like a five or seven minute like guitar solo instrumental kind of thing to it, and it was on just a 12 string, and it's pretty wild stuff. I was at the pageant. I saw him play that, and it was, and I was right up against the rail, and it was a pretty awesome night. But,
cool.
But yeah, he's a really talented guy. But yeah, I admire a lot of the different guitar, you know, styles and players, and like how they the different things they're able to do with the instrument and stuff. And, but
this
yeah.
town alone has so many good guitar players in it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that was, and touching on El Monstro, too, that was cool to see you invited up there to jam with them and stuff. And
yeah, I'm lucky to get to do that once a year. That's fun.
Yeah, I was at that Sunday show.
Yeah.
So that was really a cool moment. And a few of my buddies, Connor Lau, did it last year. That was a lot of fun to watch him play up there, and I was trying to think, like, I don't know, I can't remember, I go to a ton of shows, so I start to forget the details of them, but I can't remember who, I think, did Flynn sing on that Friday?
I think he'll sing Have a Cigar,
yeah.
And he might even play Guitar Money at a show this year.
Yeah. I was trying to remember if he play guitar or sing on it. Like, I remember, I thought I saw him there.
I've watched him do Have a Cigar. He does such a good job with that. He's got a good attitude for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Frankie from Dr. Chavegas and stuff sang with on that Sunday show where you were at.
Yeah, I didn't get to stay for that. I had to take off, but...
Yeah, it was cool, man. I was trying to figure out who it was. Like, sometimes with all the lights and everything else, sometimes it's hard to quite tell who's up there, and
sure.
Especially when they don't announce, and he comes out and he's also in character and things, it was fun. And then like at the end of the night, Jimmy's like said thanks to everybody, and he's like said thanks to Frankie for taking me back to 1986 or something like that, when they played King of the Hill together and stuff. So but did you say you're one year old man with Nukes? Is that what you said?
Nukes, yeah.
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 So that was the punk stuff?
Yeah. I guess we started that band in high school, like 85 or 86, and I was in it till 91. They moved to San Francisco and then LA and fell apart like everybody does when you go to California. But it was a lot of fun. We basically did 50s and 60s songs and wrote our own stuff, and all was kind of the same fast, loud, loose. I mean, it was Nuke shows were an experience back then. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's that's one thing I'm doing this show and just getting the opportunity to sit and talk to guys like yourself and kind of reliving some of that stuff. Even like I'm a big fan of The Urge, but I never got to see a lot of that early stuff that they did. They did the Mississippi Nights stage this year on their
I saw pictures. Show. That looked awesome.
Yeah, it was really, really well done. I mean, I've never been to Mississippi Nights, so like that's as close as I've gotten. But yeah, now to become like hear some of the stories that I missed out on, some of the stuff, and like and talking to those guys and just kind of being able to somewhat relive some of those moments with those guys is it's been a lot of fun to kind of see how where the St. Louis music scene and so on has evolved from, and where we're going and things. And I just really enjoy it. It's been a lot of fun doing the show.
That's cool.
So I appreciate you taking some time out to hang, man. And
a lot of fun.
It's been cool. Would you like if I could put some tracks on or something from Shooting with Annie or whatever you want to play? And
yeah. You want to throw any Shooting with Annie tracks? That's cool.
Yeah. What do you have any suggestions or a favorite you like?
They're all good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not tooting my own horn. I like the record. It's a good record.
I like what's that? Colvis.
Clovis, yeah.
Clovis, yeah. Clovis, yeah. Yeah. And but yeah.
Cool.
I'll throw some of those on there. And so stick around, listen to some Shooting with Annie, and pick up Grape Stains. And we don't have do you have any dates for the
Shooting with Annie doesn't have anything coming up right now. If you go to findadrive.com or Whiskey Morning, I think it might be whiskeymorningband.com. We list everything on there. There's okay. usually a lot of dates.
And there's a Facebook pages for all three bands.
Yep.
And so yeah, get out, keep up to date, come see them live. Coming to a town near you. Huh? Yeah. You guys were just in Chesterfield for New Year's Eve, and
that was a fun show.
Yeah, so you guys are a little everywhere.
Try to get as many places as possible.
Yeah, so very cool. Well, thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
I appreciate this. Have a great day.
You too. It's fun.
You stay with